passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Long and Winding Railroad here on Post Wrestling. My name is W.H. Park, and today we are going to do episode 27.
Wow.
27 episodes. That's unbelievable. And, you know, we like to use this show to talk about primarily the 90s era of All Japan Pro Wrestling, what I feel is the pinnacle of in-ring professional wrestling action. But today we're gonna kind of step out of those boundaries a little, and which we've done before. Actually, last episode we looked at a match from the 2000s with Kojima versus Kawada for the Triple Crown with Karen Peterson. But today we're going to talk with a returning guest to the Long and Winding Railroad. And that is my good friend here from Vancouver out in the west coast of Canada. It's an independent wrestling sensation, Daniel Makabe. Or how do you pronounce the last name?
You're the one who lived in Japan for years, so I don't know. Like it's Makabe, right?
But it's like, Makabe, right? So like you're
I get Makabe all the time, right? So
I like Makabe. I like kind of thinking you're like the illegitimate bastard son of Togi Makabe.
That's where the name came from. So it's not Makabe. That's one I've gotten before. That's very wrong for sure. So
that makes me laugh. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that makes it sound like it's a Scottish last name, but yeah, no. Yeah. Daniel Makabe.
Makabe. Yeah. Hey, listen, dude, we ever go to Japan, like, yeah, you know, like we're there at the same time.
Yeah.
We just pretend you're like half Japanese or something.
I've got stories. I feel really bad because I've had people assume that I am, and I'm definitely not. And you know, the name was an inside joke with my friends like 20 plus years ago that I did not expect to stick. I probably should have changed it at some point because I don't know. Like,
it's fine.
If it's culturally insensitive.
I never thought that. Listen, if anyone's like on about like cultural insensitivity, especially about like Asian stuff, it's yeah, me. I never thought about it. So I was like, oh, it's a cool name. I don't know if it was an homage. This is the first time I'm learning that's it's kind of a inside joke or an homage to Togi Makabe.
It 100% was. And you know what? The origin of the name was back, even before I trained professionally, me and my friends just horsing around backyarding, and we were trying to come up with names. And I had just met my friends and joined with their group, and was trying to come up with a name. And this was at the point that Shinya Makabe was, he was a junior. He wasn't quite young boy status anymore. He was like starting to, you know, he was in Best of the Super Juniors. He was teaming with Liger and some big like six mans and stuff, especially like I recall in the New Japan versus Osaka Pro feud. There's a really good six man that he's in on the New Japan side. So he's getting like a little bit of a rub, but he still has black tights, black boots, very kind of basic kind of just presentation, right?
Right.
He hasn't gone off. He went for an excursion later. Actually, I have a friend who was on excursion with him in like England a couple years later. And then he comes back and does the whole, you know, the Bruiser Brody and the Togi Makabe and the whole thing, right? But at this point, like I think he debuts as a young boy in like 97 or 98. And this is like 2001. And it's like, man, this guy can't get a break. Like, I don't know why I took to him, like, because he really hadn't blossomed to what he would become, but I kind of liked him. And I thought, is this guy ever going to graduate past the black boots and black tights and the very basic moveset with Boston Crabs and body slams and whatever. And I jokingly said with my friends when trying to come up with the names, like, oh, you might as well, I'm the new guy in town. I'm Daniel Makabe. I'll be the resident, you know, young boy for our little group.
That's fine.
And like, oh, that's kind of funny, but you know, that's fine for now. I'll think of something else later. And that was in 2001. So here we are in 2022.
Yeah.
And the name stuck with me. So yeah,
it's cool. I think, I mean, it stands out. No one else has a name like you. So like in a market that's undulated with like people with the name Austin or Ace and or variations of the thing of that. Yes. It's like, okay, you're, you know, something Ace or you're Ace something or you're something Austin or you're Austin something. It's just like, okay, no one's got your name. It's cool. I don't think anyone ever will. So it's all good.
That's fair. I actually had someone once joke that if I ever got signed to NXT and I had to come up with a different name, I could be Daniel Takayama. But
that'd be perfect. Exactly. They'll just bill you as like, oh, he's half Japanese. You know,
probably would. That would be pretty bad. So
it would kind of be. And then I'd be like, hey, I DM you as like, you bet. Don't do that. Please do not do that.
Yep.
So, but today, Daniel's here to talk about a match that I approached him. I said, hey, you haven't been on. I would like to have you back on the show. What match do you want to do? And you were like, oh, are we just stuck in the 90s? And I said, no, we can delve other eras as well. Like, it's up to you. And you picked the match that we're going to talk about today. What match are we going to discuss today?
Probably not the match you expected me to pick when I said like, let's do 80s. Right. Cause I mean, there's so many legendary matches in the 90s or so many legendary matches in the 80s. I don't know if it's just me trying to be like a hipster or a contrarian or wanting to pick something that's a little off the beaten path, but we're going to talk about from the 1989 Real World Tag League. It is the team of Genichiro Tenryu and Stan Hansen versus Giant Baba and Rusher Kimura.
And I remember thinking about this match. I was like, oh, that is like, you know, really odd choice, because when we think about All Japan work rate, even in the 80s, we don't really think about either Baba, who is, of course, the founder and promoter and president of All Japan Pro Wrestling, or Rusher Kimura, who, especially by 89, he's kind of really, really past his prime. And he was never really considered that great of a worker, I believe. Like, he's more of a character, and he has a lot of charisma, and that
more propelled of a brawler.
A brawler, yeah.
Prime, yeah, more so.
He was before All Japan, he was like the main star of a company called IWE in Japan, correct. I believe.
Yep.
And then he kind of journeymaned around, I think even in New Japan, and then he finally settled in All Japan Pro Wrestling. And at that point, he's basically just kind of the mid-card guy. He's even, I think, starting to do maybe some, you know, going into the comedy match realm with Eric Eigen,
which everyone knows him from the 90s and into the 2000s in Noah, right?
Yeah.
That's what I think everyone would associate with Rusher Kimura.
But I am familiar with parts of this match when you suggested to me, because I had done the finals of this Real World Tag League, which is Tenryu and Hansen versus the Olympics, which is the team of Jumbo Tsuruta and Yoshiaki Yatsu, and which is an awesome, awesome match. But the great thing about that particular match is that it is like almost an hour long, this video on YouTube, because they include clips of pretty much every other match that the Olympics and Tenryu and Hansen, plus some other teams, have in this tag league. And one of them is the infamous, famous opening spot of this match, which is Tenryu doing a tope onto Giant Baba.
Yes.
And sends him into the guardrail. And then everyone's like freaking out. Oh my God, he has destroyed Giant Baba, because Giant Baba, for being a tall man, he is actually very, he doesn't have a very sturdy looking frame.
He's frail. I mean,
he's frail looking. Yes,
he's pretty frail, and I think that's probably a byproduct of, you know, his gigantism or whatever. You know, by the time he's shockingly like, I showed this match to my girlfriend, and she was like, "How old is he? Like 100?" And I looked it up, and he was only 51 in this match. But I mean, he looks every bit of
older. He looks older.
Yeah, older, definitely. And he moves older for sure. But this is also a bygone era where, you know, people in their 50s in the 80s looked a lot older than people in their 50s nowadays do, right?
Right. So, yeah. I'm at a testament to that. I'm going to be the big 5-0 next month. So.
Are you?
Yeah. So I'm looking a bit better than Giant Baba.
Oh, well, I'm catching up. I'm almost 40, right? So
well, there you go.
There we are, right? So
there we go. It's okay.
We both look better than Giant Baba, I'd say. So,
no offense to Giant. I love Giant Baba, but no offense to him. It's just stating a fact. But so I've seen like clips, and I was just thinking, how do you get a good match? Like, because like the team. Let's talk about just Tenryu and Hansen. This is like a super team. This is like when, like, if you want to talk about American wrestling in the 80s, this is like when Dusty Rhodes teamed up with Nikita Koloff.
It's superpowers.
It's like Hogan and Savage teaming up. This is like the stature that these two men were on, and they formed this tag team in 89. And it was, I was like, what? And then, so like, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to have a challenge with some of the other teams in this tournament, which I'm going to list all the teams that were actually in this league. Cause it's a pretty interesting like league. I haven't seen all of it.
Yeah.
There is apparently like on IVP videos, they have three discs of this entire tournament that I might eventually get around to picking up. If I do, I'll let you know and share some footage maybe if that happens. I'm not saying I'm going to do that, but it might happen. But anyways, we're all friends here. Anyways, this match comes out of the 1989 Real World Tag League that featured 10 teams. It was held from November 17th to December 6th and was also not just a tournament. It was also to decide the vacant World Tag Team titles, which, you know, they tended to like vacate the tag team titles tournament time every year.
They did that every year till like 92 or 93. Like,
yeah.
It was a recurring trend, which I don't know if I like it or not. I kind of like it, but I kind of feel, I don't know. It's kind of a bummer for the team who has to vacate.
Yeah, it's like, well, yeah, I don't. I think I always believe like a tournament should determine a contender for a title match on a big show, not the actual championship, unless it's already been vacated for other reasons.
Correct. Yeah.
But let's talk about these teams. So we have Hansen and Tenryu. We have the aforementioned Olympics, Tsuruta and Yatsu. We have Baba and Kimura. We also have the British Bulldogs, Dynamite Kid and Davey Smith, but, you know, like kind of past his prime, Dynamite Kid, just kind of barely holding on at this point.
Yep.
This is a hell of a team. Abdul the Butcher and Tiger Jeet Singh. here's a better team. The Can-Am Express, Doug Furness and Dan Crawford. Amazing. And a very interesting kind of team here. Kerry Gordy teaming with not Steve Williams. This is before the Steve Williams would be his regular tag team partner, but Terry Gordy and Wild Bill Irwin formerly of the Long Riders, who I used to watch when I was watching like Montreal wrestling, because they worked a lot in the Montreal territory. The Footloose, Samson Fuyuki and Toshiaki Kawada. The Nasty Boys. Believe it or not, the Nasty Boys worked in All Japan Pro Wrestling, Brian Knobs and Jerry Sags. And finally, the team of the Great Kabuki and Shinji Takano, who I don't believe got a lot of points in this.
I can't imagine the Nasty Boys got a lot of points.
No.
Not in 1989.
I imagine they didn't make a lot of friends either, you know, given their kind of reputation that people talk about them in WWF and WCW. But anyways, this match is from, what's the date again? It is November 29th. Yep, yeah, 1989. It's from the Nakajima Sports Center in the lovely city of Sapporo in Hokkaido, which I've never been to. I've never been to Hokkaido. There's two places I have on my bucket list for Japan still, yeah, even though I lived there for almost 10 years, and that is Hokkaido and that is Okinawa. But next time I go, I'm just going to be there for a long time, like a month or something. I'm just going to check it all off.
I've been wanting to go to Japan since I graduated high school, and yeah, I still haven't managed to do it, and I don't know how I'm going to fit it all in, but yeah, one day, but yeah, Hokkaido is the northernmost island, right?
Yeah.
How far, or what's like the travel like to get there from like Tokyo?
I think it's just like, it's like an hour, 2 hours by plane, and maybe
five hours
by bullet train.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good thing because the bullet train does go directly there from Tokyo.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to do. Okinawa is a little bit farther because it's like it's actually a different island. So you have to kind of cross a kind of body of water as well. Yeah. But I mean, that's the southernmost part of Japan, which is like super hot. So yeah, it's either super hot, you go or either when it's super hot, or no. Or for Okinawa, it's either you go when it's super hot or when there's typhoons all the time.
Oh.
Okay. So, Hokkaido is great because it's kind of, the climate is more like Canada, or yeah, like particularly like here in Ontario, like they get snow and minus degree weather down there. So it's like, I could probably live in Hokkaido. And it's much more comfortable in the summer than most of central Japan, which is like just disgustingly humid and hot.
That's what I've heard. Super humid. You heard about like some of those G1 tours, like in the 90s, and like a lot of the buildings don't have air conditioning. So, yeah, I can only imagine what it was like to wrestle in those buildings. But
now I think probably all those buildings have
air conditioning, yeah.
Air conditioning, except for Sumo Hall. It has air conditioning. But let me tell you from experience, the air conditioning in the summer is not good. I refuse to ever go back into Sumo Hall in the summer. Winter, no problem. I'll see a show then. Yeah. Summer, you're likely never going to see me back in Sumo Hall.
No G1 Climax. That's
no. Or, no. Yeah. Budokan, no problem. Great air conditioning in that building. And so we're looking at the day 12 of this tournament. The attendance is listed on Cage Match as 4,800. And I can believe it. This crowd is very, very vocal. And it sounds like very, very full in this building. And,
absolutely.
The heat in this match is unreal, and we'll talk about that as we get into it. But I also want to run down this card with you, because I thought it was a pretty funny looking card. To start off, our opening match is a singles match where Mitsuo Momoda defeated Tsuyoshi Kikuchi in 8 minutes and 43 seconds. So Kikuchi's kind of still a young boy.
That would probably be really good. I recently watched, I almost suggested this, I thought it was too obscure. I watched a Momoda versus Masafuchi junior title match from 1989 recently. That was really good. Like, I'm not even just saying that. It was unbelievably good. But I've been on a huge Masafuchi kicks lately, so.
Right. I mean, Fuchi's just, especially when he's still, like, this is his prime, basically, yeah, like in the late 80s. He's amazing. Another singles match follows. Isamu Taranishi defeated Haruka Aigen in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. Following that, Mighty Inoue defeated Richard Slinger, the cousin of Terry Gordy, in 7 minutes and 48 seconds. I think Richard Slinger is like one of the few foreigners to be entered into the All Japan Dojo and trained there.
Oh, I guess if you count Monoke Moss Man, he's definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But otherwise.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this would be before, I think, Kea.
Oh, this is way before. I can't think of any other ones. There might be some, but yeah.
I think Tenta did some training. John Tenta.
Oh, Tenta absolutely did. Yeah. Sure.
But I think Richard Sling was one of the first ones because of, like, you know, apparently Terry Gordy got him into the dojo.
Yeah, for sure.
Masanobu Fuchi defeated Yoshinari Ogawa in 12 minutes, 43 seconds. That would be a good match.
Yeah.
Because Ogawa's always been good. Even at his young boy, he's
very young here for sure. But yeah, he's someone who was, I think, low rated, especially in the 90s, because he was outshined by, you know, the greatest wrestlers of all time being on the same roster as him, right? So
also, he's a junior, and like Baba never really put a spotlight on junior heavyweight wrestling in his company. Tag team match. This is interesting. The Nasty Boys defeated Akira Taue and Kenta Kobashi in 11 minutes and 54 seconds.
Interesting.
I mean, this is like when both guys are still young.
They're both really young too. Yeah, they're both for really sure. Young, yeah. Not in the tournament, obviously. So
Bill Irwin and Terry Gordy defeated Isao Takagi and Shinichi Nakano in 9 minutes and 50 seconds. And then our real world tag league matches are Takano and Kabuki with 2 points defeated the Footloose of Fuyuki and Kawada, who had 3 points in 17 minutes and 2 seconds. The British Bulldogs defeated Abdullah Butcher and Tiger Jeet Singh in 8 minutes and 23 seconds. The Olympics defeated the Can-Am Express in 18 minutes and 4 seconds. I got to track that down.
That would be good, right? Good, yeah.
And finally, the match we're going to talk about is our main event, Tenryu and Hansen versus Baba and Kimura. Okay, so I don't know, with some background, I guess, like, in my notes, I kind of talked about this already, that Baba and Kimura, way past their primes at this point in history, and are usually doing comedy tag matches on the undercard, and Tenryu and Hansen are like this dream super combo for this tournament. But I don't know, would you have any kind of background information that you dug up for this match?
I don't really. I just think it's such an interesting dynamic, and I wanted to come at things from a little bit of a different perspective from your usual guest on this show. Like, way back when on episode 2, I think, on the second show, we talked about Kobashi and Kikuchi versus Taue and Tsuruta. And I thought for a second, I remember way back when you even said, oh, you should come back and do the Kobashi and Kikuchi versus Can-Am's match, because that's such a legendary match. I don't think you have you done that yet? Or
I haven't done that yet. I think I have someone
Dibs on it.
Yeah.
I thought about that for a second. I'm like, oh, that would be perfect. You know, it's been a couple of years since I've been back, and we can talk about that match. It's such a legendary match. But I thought, I told you, you know, I wanted to talk about some names that you hadn't featured on the show before. And I don't know if you talked about any of these guys on the show, maybe Hansen, but Tender's not around in the 90s. And I can't imagine Baba or Kimura coming up. So
no. So with Tenryu, with the primer episode, which was about the formation of Triple Crown, he's definitely talked about in that.
That makes sense. Yes,
it is kind of a shame that, you know, like, we don't really get to talk about Tenryu that much, because I love Tenryu. I think he's one of the greatest of all time. Yep. And so any excuse actually to talk about Tenryu, I'm all for it. So, yep. Like, I was like, yes, and I've been very, very curious about this particular match, because it is such an interesting pairing, and then you look online and see what other people think, and my God, people go like crazy with the praise for this match. And I was like, okay, and I'm like without going kind of reading too deep into why, I was like, okay, this person really liked it. They give it 10, 10, 10, 10 on Cage Match, or, you know, it's like rated this many stars with some other people. And I'm like, okay, let's see what. And then I watched it and I was like, oh my God, I can see why. Because, you know, getting ahead of myself a little bit, I think when you watch this match, and I would assume most people who are watching this, us talk about it, have watched this match, it's like, this match is like the perfect, like, textbook, like, example of how you get heat on a tag team, like, and how you get heat on two different members of the same tag team, and also at the same time, and how you build a hot tag. It's like, my God, the hot tag, like, is just that. It's unbelievable, because this crowd, when the hot tag comes in, when the first hot tag comes in, this
there's only one tag.
There's only one tag, right?
There's only one hot tag.
Yeah, sorry. Like when this hot tag happens, Nakajima's Sports Center just goes absolutely crazy. It's unbelievable. It is up there with like some of the biggest pops. Whoa, we just lost Daniel here. We're getting him back here. Okay, you're back.
We're good.
It's up there with like some of the greatest pops in the history of All Japan. Like, you know, like Misawa beating Jumbo, you know, Kawada finally defeating Misawa, Kobashi winning the Triple Crown. It's up there. And we'll talk about why we're gonna go through this match. But we should just go through it.
Absolutely. All right. I mean, I'll just kind of lead in and say, I think it's like the two big stars of like the 60s and the 70s versus maybe the two biggest stars of the 80s. I think that's like an interesting kind of dynamic too that you get. And yeah, well, I mean, well, as we talk about it, we'll go more into it. But I just think stylistically and just formulaically, like I think like pro wrestlers, a pro wrestler, I could learn a lot from watching this match on you don't necessarily have to fall into certain formulas and certain tropes when it comes to putting a tag match together.
No, definitely not. I mean, this thing follows certain tropes. Is like, it's kind of, I say it's kind of textbook, because if you want to study on how to like get heat, and yep, if you're working with like, if you are a certain level of a wrestler in terms, yes, of skill set, and you're working with people who might not match you on a level, that doesn't matter, because these like Tenryu and Hansen just take these guys who are past their primes and kind of limited in what they can do with their mobility and raise them to their level. It's unbelievable. But getting into the match, we start off with, before even the bell rings, Daniel, holy shit, Jinichiro Tenryu decides that he's going to like, you know, kind of precursor his eventual departure from All Japan, metaphorically, by waylaying Giant Baba that way, by topeing him, by doing a tope suicida before the bell rings as Giant Baba is making his way to the ring. He doesn't even get on the apron. He's still in his robe. Tenryu does a tope through the ropes and it drives Giant Baba down, maybe to the guardrail, but he's down, and everyone ringside is going nuts because they're seeing their paycheck like go up in smoke. They're like, oh my God, is he okay? Because he's the guy who signs all our checks, and they just rush over to see if he's okay. And this crowd, right off the bat, before even the bell rings, they're going nuts because they've never seen anyone do that to Baba.
Yeah, and from personal experience, you know, I've had a promoter, actually a promoter here in Canada, who said, you know, one time I asked him, like, how would you like me to start my match? And he said, I think it would get really hot if you just jump the guy right off the beginning and dive out onto him. No one would expect it in this kind of stylistic match. And here it works. It's the same thing. You know, who would expect Tenryu to dive out onto Baba? I'd like that you referenced the metaphor of, what was it? It's less than 6 months before
Tenryu's
gone, right? You know?
Yeah.
Early 1990, and he's off to SWS, and yeah, there, I don't know, there's five or six young boys all in the matching tracksuits who are tending to Baba for 5-10 minutes, something like that. I don't know, it's a while.
I'm sure it feels like an eternity for Rushi Kimura, because now this has now become a handicap match, because now Rushi Kimura is in the ring by himself with both Tenryu and Stan Hansen, and I have my notes. Oh my God, he is fucked. Because these are two of the stiffest wrestlers in the history of wrestling, let alone All Japan. And Rush Kimura, how old is Rush Kimura at this point?
I didn't look. I think he's a little younger, but like he's right around, he's right around 50 as well.
He's right around 50, and he's going to be in there with Hansen and Tenryu.
He looks a little bit more spry. It's funny though; you can tell who pays the checks though, because, don't get me wrong, they give it to Baba. There's some pretty hard chops. There's one sequence in particular where they take turns chopping Baba. But you could tell that they're like, okay, Kimura, you can take a little bit more of a beating than Baba can. Because there's some real hard lariats, some real hard kicks. Like, they do not take it easy on Kimura. Not whatsoever.
So Tenryu basically starts the assault by attacking Kimura with chops and stomps. Hansen bludgeons him with stiff forearms and kicks. But, you know, Kimura, he's a tough dude. He's like shoe leather. He valiantly fights back with the only thing he can really do, which are headbutts. So he starts headbutting Tenryu, grabbing his hair and trying to exact revenge for Baba. There's a bulldog by Kimura for a two count. Unbelievable. Hansen tags in, but Kimura has headbutts and an eye rake waiting for him. This is a very simple offense, but my God, it works for this man, for Rusty Kimura.
I'm all about, you know, minimalism, and I'm all about maximizing minimal output, right? And like, if you were in there with those two and you had the skill set of Rusty Kimura and you're, you know, that advanced in age, you throw what you can, and the man made his living on headbutts. So you throw headbutts and they're effective to a point, but yeah, that's kind of his bread and butter. And that's what he does to take it to those two.
For a little bit of variety though, there is a lariat by Rusty Kimura on Stan Hansen.
I remember that.
And Kimura tries to open up Hansen with these punches. It's weird. This is the point in the match where I feel like Hansen's just like, what do I do with this guy? Because he looks very confused in this point of the match with Kimura being on the offense on him. Because I'm sure usually like Hansen's the one dominating him in tag matches or whatever. But it also comes kind of across like in the kayfabe sense. Like I can't believe this guy's still fighting back. Everything me and Ten were doing isn't keeping him down. So there's kind of that as well. It's like, in the kind of like, if you kind of want to keep it kayfabe, in the way you want to watch it, it's like, okay, he's really like throwing them off their game now because they don't expect this kind of retaliation from Kimura onto them.
Yeah. And that's what leads to, you know, kind of things escalating, right? Honestly. And that's, leave it to Stan Hansen to escalate things into basically a bar fight and do what he has to do. But yeah, it's absolutely storytelling. It's escalating. I'm sure it wasn't laid out, you know, spot for spot, but I'm sure it was like, okay, we're going to sell for this guy. And then we're going to have to come at him even harder from different angles with new levels of brutality to, you know, even the score. And that's what they do.
Yeah, I mean, so Hansen's not knowing what to do with Kimura, so he tags in Tenryu, who levels Kimura with a lariat of his own. Tenryu rains down chops, but, you know, Kimura keeps fighting back with his headbutts. The crowd are into this fight and start chanting Kimura's name, which is, like, it's just great, great to see, because I would assume that he doesn't get that many chants of his name, like
probably
this,
not
this
not
raucous, that. Right, this loud. Yeah. Tenryu hits his signature enzigiri, which I love. I like how it's kind of like just comes across. He doesn't do it like most other people do, like how Owen Hart did his, or how like someone like Kawada would do one, or Jushin Liger or someone like that. He just kind of does like kind of a hooking version of the enzigiri.
I refer to it as an old man falling out of bed, but it's literally, he doesn't even leave his feet really until like the last possible minute. Once the one foot has gotten up high enough to make contact, then he leaves his feet. It's not even really a jump. It's just kind of there's a kind of a crescent motion. It's beautiful in its, you know, kind of earnestness, I guess. It's because it's not really beautiful, but it works, and it's distinctly Tenryu. Like,
it's definitely,
I've never seen anyone else try and do it like him. So
I don't think it would work for anyone else. I think because he's just like, I like this move. I'm going to do it the way I can do it. And he doesn't try to be something that he's not, which is fine. It's one of the great things about Tenryu. He has such a great simplistic moveset, but it's so effective because his timing in everything he does is so good.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So from here, Hansen comes in and tosses Kimura to the outside. And this is where, this is the escalation you're talking about, Daniel. He bashes Kimura's head into the railing, which is probably what causes Kimura to bleed, but maybe not, because there's more. The big Texan then sets up one of those Japanese folding tables, which don't have much give. And I don't, as far as I know, they are not gimmicked back in the 80s.
No, I don't think so.
And he proceeds to ram Kimura's head into this table. Tenryu then throws a table into Kimura's head. And Hansen does it again, because why not? He's Stan Hansen, and he's known for this. Hansen continues with the destruction of Rush Kimura's head. We then cut to a shot, I think, just to you know, maybe give the audience watching on television a bit of a break. We see a shot of Baba being treated with cold spray, and all the young boys are still like, oh my God, is he going to be okay? Which is great. It's a great scene for, like, well, what about Baba? I mean, we might have forgotten about Baba, because Kimura's just been beaten to a bloody pulp, like literally, by Hansen and Tenryu at this point. So we need to get back to focusing on Baba, which is also smart, because, you know, Baba's not done. We're gonna get to it. But sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
But I have my notes. Kimura's head is indestructible as he makes his comeback against these two with headbutts. Yes. Unbelievable.
Yep. Now at this point, they're bloody headbutts. Thing, right?
He is bleeding at this point. Yeah.
They literally, like, they take the table and they, like, rest it up against the post on the outside, so it's got nowhere to go, and probably slam his head into there, I don't know, 10 times, something like that. And then, yeah, I mean, he bleeds, as one does, which blood in All Japan was a little bit more commonplace in the 80s. By the time of the, you know, the primary focus of your show in the 90s, we're not getting as much blood in All Japan Pro Wrestling. I think that adds a nice added layer of drama to the match. And like I said, you know, he attacks them with headbutts early on. They try to slow him down by literally bashing his head in, and he still comes back attacking them with more headbutts, because he's Rusher Kimura, and even though he's old, he's resilient, and he's bled a lot in his lifetime. Like, he kind of made his name as, like, a brawler and a tough guy back in IWE. And, you know, you'd see later on, you know, when he was doing those comedy matches, he had a real nasty forehead. So, yes. You know, not quite Abdullah the Butcher level, but approaching. And yeah, so I can't imagine it really. He probably didn't even blade, honestly. It's probably just scar tissue and impact on that table got him going. And
I mean, it's pretty brutal to watch, like, yeah, being ran into, like, this table constantly by Tenryu and Hansen, to the point it kind of reminded me of, like, the match that, you know, Nigel McGuinness has with Brian Danielson.
I'll take wood over steel any day.
Oh, yeah.
Towards getting my head rammed in. But yeah, it's approaching that level of extreme for sure. And, like, there's no hands up. Like, it's,
oh, no.
Yeah, it's
not Rashi Kimura. No, he'd be like, nah, fuck that. Yeah. I'm going to go straight into this. Like,
brutal.
This table. Yeah.
And then no hands up as he's making his comeback and more headbutts, you know, just trying to get back to his partner who, yeah. We do see him getting the cold spray on the floor. There's also a moment where they cut, and he's still got the robe on this whole time. That's the other thing. And one of the young boys has got, I don't know if he's got, like, a compress or something, but he's, like, massaging his, like, rib cage. And I just thought it's so lovingly, but obviously it's his, you know, it's his sensei. It's his, you know, it's the
well, he's their father too. Like, he has adopted most of this roster because he didn't have children of his own. So he thought of his wrestlers as his kids. So especially at that age, they're probably like, maybe, you know, they're like, oh, this guy's our, essentially our dad.
Yeah.
You know? Strict dad.
And he got steamrolled by Tenryu.
Tenryu. Yeah. So Kimura's making his comeback, but Tenryu cuts it off, and it's back to being a 2-on-1 beating on Kimura. And this is a masterclass from Tenryu and Hansen on getting heat on an opponent. Basically, this has been a handicap match, Daniel, and it's just great because it's not boring. This beating. No, Kimura gets his comebacks. They sell for him. And then at the right time, they cut him off, and then they just take turns brutalizing him. But it remains entertaining because if you think of a squash match, like sometimes, you know, someone's dominating another person in a wrestling match, it's not always interesting all the time because it's like, okay, it's just, they're just dominating. There's no drama to the match, but this has drama for the entire time that Rick Kimura's getting beaten, coming back, getting beaten again.
It's kinetic. And that's where a lot of people nowadays, like I've seen way more than my fair share of boring heat segments, not just in tag matches, but in singles matches as well, because you don't have a kinetic babyface or, you know, person selling, working as the underdog, whatever you want to call them. But like Kimura is, you know, it's very similar to, you know, what people refer to as the Ricky Steamboat rule, right? Ricky Steamboat was big about never giving an opponent, you know, two or three bits of offense before he would even throw a punch, some form of, you know, you're showing life. And I do that now when I'm teaching younger wrestlers, I will make an analogy to UFC or any kind of real fighting. If someone is stagnant, if someone doesn't move, if someone's not responsive, the fight's over, right? The referee stops it because they're not defending themselves, right? So why in this simulated form of a fight, why would we not defend ourselves? Why would we not even just attempt a comeback? You don't necessarily have to be successful at it, but you at least have to show that you're in this fight. You're still attempting to make that tag or muster enough offense or whatever it is, right? So I just think that can be a lost art at times. And I think Rusher does a really good job. And they do a great job. Like they sell, you would think these two guys, Tenru and Hansen, as big of stars as they are, as tough as they are, they obviously don't have egos when it comes to selling for these legendary wrestlers from the previous decade, because a lot of people would sort of, you know, they'd look at Kimura, they'd look at Baba and go, you know, but they must have the reverence for these guys because they really did pave the way and they were stars of a bygone era. And they recognize, like, you know, maybe one day we'll be in this situation and we'll want people, the younger generation, to sell for us. So, you know, they do just such a good job of ebbs and flows and ups and downs. And they really do have just an interesting, I hate handicap matches. And this is essentially two back-to-back handicap matches. And both of them are just so completely enthralling and exciting the entire time.
I think also we should mention, like, Rush Kimura's facials are unbelievable. He has so much personality just from the pain that he exhibits on his face, especially when the blood comes out. Like, but the struggle that he will not, like, you're going to have to kill him to basically stop this match, like, for you to beat
him. I would believe that. He gets that across, you know?
It's the facial expressions are so important. I think Baba must teach something in the dojo about facial expressions, because you got, like, so many great people who have facial expressions in All Japan. Like, you know, in this case, it would be, like, Kimura, but not that he was trained in All Japan Dojo, but maybe he taught facial expressions to people like Kawada or something like
that.
Well,
and, like, Kawada and Kobashi are both all-timers when it comes to that stuff, right? So, I mean, there's definitely, that's something that was passed on, absolutely, I have to imagine.
From this point, Tenru lays the boots to the cut on Kimura's head, just being a vicious bastard. Baba finally rises from his prone state on the ground, and this crowd is electric, just goes completely electric to see that he might actually be part of this match, that he's okay, because everyone loves Giant Baba. He's a cultural icon, not just in wrestling, but in the culture of Japan. Like, people know who he is, who Inoki is. They know who Stan Hansen is. Like, you might not even be a wrestling fan, you know who Stan Hansen is. That's the kind of penetration that Stan Hansen had. But, like, that's the kind of
penetration. Have you ever seen the giant, the statue of him?
Where I'm suplexing the car? Yeah. I not in person, but I've seen pictures of it. That's on the bucket list, too.
Okay.
See that good statue in person.
We're gonna go to Japan. We're gonna see all these things. So.
I'm gonna go see the whatever new life-size Gundam they have in Tokyo Odaiba, and then we'll go wherever the statue is and get some ramen or yakiniku. It'll be fun, my friend. But yeah, this so he gets up, Tenru runs Kimura's head into Stan Hansen's elbow. There's a shoulder tackle by Hansen. Hansen kicks Kimura in the head, because why not? Tenru stiff chops him to give a bit of variety to the assault, because, like, you know, it can't just be kicks. We got to chop him. And I love Tenru's chops. They are so loud. And he's up there with, like, for me, like, Kobashi and Kensuke Sasaki throwing chops. It's just like, and it's a crisp sound. But it's also, you can see, like, when he contacts, there's like this, it's kind of like getting hit with a, like, I don't know, like lead or something like that as well, I feel.
He's an all-timer, and those chops are absolutely hard. And I think he's like, I've never, you know, seen him live, but I think he's like, you kind of low rate. I think he's a really big man. Like, I get the impression, you know, he was a former sumo, but I think he's got a lot of power to throw behind those chops, you know?
I mean, he's I think of similar size to Jumbo.
Yeah.
I mean, Jumbo's a big dude, like, yeah, a Japanese guy.
Big Japanese guys, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So Baba is finally on the apron, and the crowd intensity rises. Tenru sees this and keeps kicking Kimura in the head. And as Hansen goes for a cover, Baba comes in. Like, not into the ring, but he just puts his leg through the ropes and stomps on Hansen's head, and it pops his crowd, because they're like, yeah, Baba did something. Baba is all fired up. This is great. This is one of my favorite parts, is all fired up from the sneak attack from Tenru and the mugging that Tenru and Hansen have been perpetrating on Kimura throughout this entire match. And he wants to get in. He wants to beat the shit out of these two. At one point, Tenru and Hansen just keep assaulting the cut on Kimura's head with elbows, knees, and stuff. So that's their focus, not just, you know, like, his head in general. They're focusing on the cut on his head. They just want to make him, like, you know, pass out from blood deprivation or whatever. I'm at a loss for words. That's how great this match is. But at one point, Tenru drops his top rope backwards elbow for a two count. Tenru hits his enziguri and decides to chop Baba on the apron, and now Baba is even more pissed than before, and this crowd really, really wants to see Baba in this match, and it's great.
It's you know, we're building the kettle's about to boil. We're getting to that point where we're gonna get that hot tag, and everyone's just gonna come unglued, and yeah, it's a really nice, like, natural progression, right? You know, we have like, Baba sells that tope forever, but then he doesn't just, you know, he's back on the apron and he immediately gets in, like,
but he's okay. Also rubbing his side as well, like,
he's selling it, and, like, and, you know, yeah, he's back on the apron, but, like, Kimura needs to find an opportunity to get to him, you know, like, I think it's not instant gratification, right? We make the people it's like, I don't know, storytelling back in the day, it paid off. People had more patience, I feel.
But I do think there's, like, with Tenru going to sneak attack Baba on the apron, yeah, that adds that dynamism and, like, you're the kinetic aspect that you're talking about.
Yeah, here. And that's like a classic, you know, Southern style tag thing, you know, where if you're getting the heat on someone and you try to go the other guy in, or you know, hit him off the apron, or... I say Southern style, but it became a thing in All Japan very much, yeah, sure, that they used all the time. But yeah, that just prolongs the inevitable and just builds anticipation. And certainly this crowd were just eager to finally get that tag.
Oh, well, they don't have to wait long, because at this point, Tenru charges into the corner, but instead of connecting with Kimura the way he wants to, Kimura, he has a headbutt waiting for Tenru. And from there, he's able to finally tag in Giant Baba. And Daniel, this has to be one of the greatest hot tags in the history of wrestling. I'm not being
certainly, you know, from a 50-year-old man, I think it's up there. We might not have the kind of athleticism that you would see from certain, you know, classic hot taggers, you know, Rock and Roll Express or more modern examples, but he just unloads with, like, you know, 10 minutes of pent up, you know, selling on the floor and seeing what they're doing to his partner. And it's like a Giant Baba unloading the clip, like, picture that in your head, and it's that times 10, honestly.
Oh, it's beautiful. But I'm also talking about, like, the crowd reaction to this tag. It's yep. pretty amazing.
It's honestly, yeah, it's great. And it's like, how often do you see this guy, especially at this point in his career, in this scenario, you know, like where they really do this masterful job of building anticipation in the crowd. So when they finally get to see him, like, he is a legend, like you say, and, you know, he's someone who kept himself on the shows, but really, you know, by this point, he's not working a ton of main events, and it's almost like a homage to foregone, you know, like times where he was a main eventer and he was a superstar, and maybe we're going to get to see him do it again, you know, for old time's sake.
So Baba's House of Fire, he hits Tenryu with a big boot and gives one to Hansen for his troubles. There's a Russian leg sweep by Baba. Hansen breaks up the pin attempt. Baba attacks Hansen, but here comes Tenryu to cut him off. Then this is where they start double teaming Baba, but with the big boots and the Russian leg sweep, like, the crowd are getting, you know, Baba's greatest hits in this hot tag, and they're going crazy. They love it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. But the same thing, you know, it almost turns into, we get this amazing hot tag, and then it becomes like, it's a fight. It's very back and forth. And like, they sell a really well for Baba, and it's really, dynamic, you know, and it's, that kind of carries on throughout the rest of the match. And Baba is kind of treated like, you know, like a superhero, that he fights off these two guys, because now the rules have been reversed. Kimura's on the floor being tended to by the young boys. I don't know. He eventually does get up on the side of the apron, but for the most part, he's donezo for this match.
So, you know, Baba does continue hitting, like, they start double teaming him, but he's able, like you're saying, he fights back. He hits a lot of his other signature moves, like the part where he drives his opponent's head into his calf with like a stomp. Yep. The giant Baba overhead chop, classic. Yep. The kind of the dropping neck breaker that he does.
The diving neck breaker drop is like that's a low key underrated move. Like Bret Hart would do it, obviously, but like not a ton of people ever have used that move. I've always loved that move.
I think it's for Baba. It looks great because of his height, you know?
I think you're right. And just his mass, right? Like, is that wide torso that doesn't really match the proportions for the rest of his body, kind of driving him and his opponent down to the mat. It's a cool looking move.
Yeah. Hansen is able to cut off this comeback because he starts attacking Baba's bad ribs with a chair. Yeah. Baba gets the abdominal stretch on Tenryu, and Hansen comes in, breaks it up to a chorus of boos from the fans. They don't want to see their beloved hero Giant Baba be treated this way with bad sportsmanship on the part of Stan Hansen here. Tenryu slaps the bad ribs, and Baba comes back with another overhand chop. Hansen tags in and goes for the ribs as well. So now it's like, you know, first they targeted Kimura's head and then hit the cut on his head, and now beautiful psychology, just, we got the ribs on Baba, let's go for those.
It's a masterclass, honestly. It's just so and at the same time, like, it's not, I don't think it's obvious or, you know, overt. Like, yes, that's what they're doing, and that's the selling that's happening, but it's not this like melodramatic, you know, the selling is very natural and subtle, and like, you know, you could watch this match and not even really notice, like, oh, that's the story of this match. You just be like, well, these two guys are just kicking this guy's ass. But there is this little, this added layer kind of woven through that. It's just smart. It's, you know, that's what makes, you know, that's what takes a good match and makes it a great match, as far as I'm concerned, you know, just added depth that you pick up upon repeat viewing.
So there's lots of back and forth between the Tenryu Hansen team going for Baba's ribs and Baba each time valiantly fighting back with his signature offense, that, and each time he hits a signature move, it pops the audience every time. They love it. At one point, they hit a double shoulder tackle and then double suplex him.
Yep.
And then hit an awkward looking spike pile driver. And I think at this point, the crowd are like freaking out because, oh my God, he is taking these types of bumps for these guys.
Spike pile driver's big. They don't, luckily they don't really get all of it. You know, I can't imagine holding up Giant Baba. Like, that's a big, heavy frame. And Tender's a strong guy, obviously. I mean, he gets him up a little later on, spoilers. But holding him up for a pile driver, waiting for Hansen to jump off, they don't fully get the full spike, luckily for Baba's sake, probably. But still, that's a big, big move for someone like that to be taking and kicking out of. So
you got to imagine that this is these moves that he's taking from them, this is all his idea. Because, like, I can't see Tender or Hansen suggesting, hey, can we do these to you? He's probably like, oh, do the double superplex on me, and hit me with a spike hot driver.
I have to imagine he's in the back saying, like, okay, we're really going to make the people have a memorable moment. You know, when's the last time you saw Baba take a beating like this? You know, I think, I'm sure he felt it the next day, but, like, he knew this was going to be a special match. And there was one moment, like, I just love how good they work as a tandem. Like, we need more Tender and Hansen. Like, honestly, their run as a tag team is
too short.
Short because they work so well as a team. There's one moment where they take turns, like, chopping Baba in the ropes, and Tender's naturally right-handed and Hansen's naturally left-handed. So they're throwing them from either sides with equal force. That segment ends really beautifully with Tenryu running into a Baba boot and selling it, like, amazingly, like spit goes flying in the air. And then there's another moment where they take turns just trading elbow drops on this poor guy, like, cannot get up. And they probably hit between the two of them 10 elbow drops in succession. And it's just like, these are big guys moving at, like, a clip. And yeah, I want to see more of them. Maybe the secret is having to track down more of that real world tag league. I mean, the finals is great.
You know what? I watched the match they had in Corken Hall.
Yeah.
It was Hansen and Tenryu versus Tsuruta and a young Kenny Kobashi. And it's awesome. It's on YouTube. It's easy to find. I was just like, oh, I'll watch a bit of this and finish it later. I just kept watching it. It was that sounds good.
I'll watch it after this.
Yes, it's and honestly, like, I at some point I'm gonna review, because I reviewed the finals of this tag league, Tsuruta and Yatsu versus Hansen and Tenryu for a different show for someone else's podcast, but I'm gonna do it for this show at some point in the future. It's so amazing. What a great match.
It's a great match. Like, it gets kind of overshadowed because the 88 finals is what everyone talks about, which is, you know, Tenryu and Kawada versus Hansen and Gordy.
Yeah.
Some people say is the best, you know, match in the 80s for all of All Japan, right? So 89 gets overlooked quite often, right? But it's, you know, it's just as good.
I think, like, Yoshiaki Yatsu will, like, blow people's minds, because I don't think he gets enough credit for what an amazing wrestler.
He was such a good wrestler. You know, great team with Tenryu, great team with Choshu.
Choshu, yeah.
Choshu, and great team with Tsuruta. And yeah, like, I mean, I certainly didn't have a frame of reference for him until I got deeper into my fandom, because when I first started watching Japanese wrestling, he was running his own promotion, the Social Progress or whatever the independent was. He was basically a glorified jobber in Pride, losing to our fellow Canadian Gary Goodridge and taking just, like, horrific beatings in the process. So, and subsequently, like, I think he's lost a leg, maybe.
He's lost a leg, but he's still
wrestling. I've seen him walking with a prosthetic. And
he's wrestling with a prosthetic in DDT.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully he's doing okay. But yeah, anyways, underrated wrestler. He's running.
Underrated.
Very underrated, yeah. For sure.
But back to this match. Tenryu and Hansen keep the hits coming, because they hit a power bomb double team, and Baba goes down. At one point, Kimura grabs Hansen by the leg, I think Hansen's shooting into the ropes.
Yeah.
Hansen and Kimura sees his opportunity to try to help Baba by grabbing by the leg to prevent him from, I guess, hitting the lariat.
Yep.
But Hansen frees himself and decides, hey, Kimura, fuck you. Hits him with the sick looking Western lariat that, you know, I think this is what knocks him down to the ring, back to the floor again.
Yep.
And then, Tenryu hits another enziguri on Baba and hits the ropes twice to charge at Baba, but this is great. He hits one side of the ropes, hits the other side of the ropes, because he's like building up speed and power. But as he's about to hit Baba, Baba is ready to hit him with his big boot, and it's glorious.
Yep, Yeah, and that's the spot that they actually go to it twice. The first time, Tender just kind of runs in, eats it. Second time, he tries to build up a little more momentum and still eats it. So
it's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if am I incorrect, is that does Hansen come charging in shortly thereafter? Or?
So Hansen's going for like a lariat, like close yes. to the ropes, because Baba's close to the ropes. But Baba ducks under Hansen's lariat, and, yep. and this sends Hansen all the way out to the rope. And I was like afraid he was going to like land on his head by from his own momentum on outside the ring.
He's shockingly, I mean, into the 90s, he was doing topes. He was, you know, still pretty agile for a very big man. But yeah, he takes it. It goes flying over the top ropes to the floor. And here we are. We're left with, you know, the owner of All Japan and one of the biggest stars of All Japan, Tenryu and Baba, left in the ring to duke it out.
Yeah, so, you know, Tenryu's attempting to do another power bomb on him, this time by himself, but Baba's able to backdrop his way out of this. But Tenryu holds on. So, like, he kind of backdrops it, but Tenryu keeps his grip around
keeps
Baba's
grip.
Waist.
Keeps
his grip. Amazing. He rolls over and rolls through it, I should say, and then he hits what I say is a terrifying-looking power bomb that almost turns into like an early version of the Ganzo bomb, not quite, thank God, or yeah. or kind of a early version of the Tiger Driver 91. Doesn't hit that either. Thank God for Baba. Yeah. But I do make a note that this looks like it's an inch away from breaking Baba's neck. This power bomb.
Thankfully for Baba, because he's so big, there's not the kind of force that we would associate with the Ganzo bomb or the Tiger Driver 91, where it's like just like up and then driving straight down. It's like power bomb doesn't quite get him to where it is. It's a nasty angle, don't get me wrong. He lands him basically just right on his neck and folds all of his body weight over. Even if it, you know, even if he hadn't dropped him from a height, I think he wasn't kicking out just from the, you know, his entire weight and Tenryu pressing down on him, right? But yeah, it's the first time I ever saw Giant Baba take a powerbomb, certainly.
Yes.
So
maybe the only time. Like, I can't think of him doing too many, especially post-89 at this point in his
probably
in his
not.
Life.
Yeah, it's it looks like it would keep him down for a three. Yeah.
And it does. 1, 2, 3. Tenryu, Jinichiro Tenryu has pinned Giant Baba in 20 minutes and 22 seconds. Tenryu is the only Japanese wrestler to have pinned Giant Baba in any kind of context in an All Japan ring. So singles, tags, whatever. He's the only Japanese wrestler to ever have done this.
In this match, or is that, had he done it before or since? This is the only time?
This is the only time any Japanese wrestler has pinned.
I didn't even have that context. So that's amazing. Like, I'm discovering this now. I didn't even realize. Okay, so I picked a great match for this show.
Yeah, historically, it's very important because this is the prelude to 6 months later, Tenryu's going to leave All Japan to form SWS, and then after that folds war. And then he becomes a journeyman, and he ends up in New Japan for pro wrestling for a while. And he in New Japan, he pins Antonio Inoki, and he is the only person, only wrestler in history to have pinfall victories over both Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki. And, like, I mean, I don't know what – if I think that alone, forget the fact that he's – such an amazing wrestler and has been part of so many great matches and helped really launch a lot of careers in wrestling.
Yep.
If you think about, like, just from war alone.
Yep.
But to be able to say, I hold victories over pinfall victories, it doesn't matter tag or singles. Like, Baba said, you're going to pin me.
Yeah.
Tsuruta, who is his favorite, never got to pin Baba. Tenryu pinned Baba.
And to think, like, Kimura's right there. Kimura could have taken the fall.
Oh, yeah.
And
you would think that that's...
Kimura took lots of falls in this tournament, right? But, yeah.
You would think that would be the finish, wouldn't you? Like, that Kimura's... Oh, Kimura's going to tag back in, and he's going to...
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, I was mistaken. Like, Kimura never tags back into this match. It's just one...
It's a single tag.
A single tag from the babyface team is unreal. It's so amazing. But, yeah, Tenryu, Inoki... And Baba, like, I'm thinking about that just right now. I'm just, like, blown away.
That's crazy.
He's also, like, one of the few people to hold, you know, the IWGP heavyweight title and the All Japan Triple Crown. I just wish, like, Misawa, like, said, you know what? You can hold the GHC title for, like, a month because then he would have been the first Grand Slam of Japanese Ken's wrestling.
That though, right?
I think Kensuke was first, and then Muto.
Oh yes,
and then Takayama, and now now Kojima.
Yeah,
is part of that Grand Slam club, and I kind of keep it exclusive. Don't let too many people into that club.
Don't water it down.
No. Keep it special.
As much as when those guys who had the reins in the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s, right? So you say that, you know, he launched a lot of careers, and he obviously did it with War, even some names that people don't necessarily associate with War who are still going to this day, like Tomohiro Ishii. But inadvertently, he kind of helped strap the rocket to Misawa as well, because Tenryu leaving is what forced Baba's hand to having to push more of the younger talent going into the 90s. And that's why we get that classic Misawa win over Jumbo Tsuruta at Budokan Hall in June of 1990, right? So
for sure. I mean, like, if you talk about, like, people that got their start with Tenryu and his in War, there's Masaki Mochizuki, there's not kind of, I still think even like Ultimo Dragon, even though he was had a career before, but like being in War and having the matches with Chris Jericho got his start in Japan with War, same with Lance Storm, Ghetto and Jado, because they were aligned with Samson Fuyuki, I think, first in War, and then they kind of branch out to do FMW later on, join FMW afterwards.
The first promotion, Japanese promotion, to bring over Rey Mysterio Jr., Psychosis, Juventud Guerrera, was War. So, yeah.
There's a great story. I don't know if you've ever heard from Lance Storm where he's like, he says Tenryu's the best boss he's ever had in wrestling.
I've heard that before, yes. Yeah.
Because, like, he's in Japan when his first child is born, and Tenryu says, "Oh, I heard your wife just had your first child. Congratulations!" Shakes his hand, and then Lance Storm is like a giant wad of money.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy he was. But I have a little surprise that I actually dug up for this. I was going to show before we get off the subject of 1980s All Japan, but I don't think I've ever shown this like online, or I've never taken a picture to post on Twitter, but I dug it up. This was something that years and years ago, I was at a friend's house and they had this just hanging up in their bathroom and didn't understand the context of it whatsoever. And I said, you have to give this to me. And so I'll show it now. I don't know how well it's going to show up on the camera, but this is an All Japan Pro Wrestling 15th anniversary, so 1987.
Wow.
It's a bath towel with the entire roster as caricatures of
that Eddie. Is freaking amazing. Oh my god.
Front and center is Baba and Tsuruta and Tenryu. They're all on there. So
there you go. Please send a picture of that to me.
I'll take a better picture so you can zoom in on it. Yeah.
That's amazing. It's
one of my most prized possessions. So
we get a lot of exclusives on this show from Daniel Makabe here, including like this incredible rare towel from All Japan's 15th anniversary. Amazing.
Just using as a towel for like a decade before I discovered and said, you have to give it to me and stop drying yourself with it.
Well, thank God you saved it. From fading from too many
drying. It's pretty faded already, but yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of this match. And I my thoughts are, like, again, I've said it, it's a masterclass in getting heat, in building towards a hot tag. And if you're into wrestling, like becoming a wrestler or are a wrestler, you're watching this. Like, watch this match if you haven't already, and just study it. It's a really great example of how to be a great heel tag team, but also just how to be an amazing underdog babyface from both Kimura and Baba. I don't want to just, like, you know, forget Kimura, because he's so amazing and integral to this match as well.
He sets the table and then Baba, you know, kind of carries on. Yeah, but it's, I love it. There's literally a single tag. And if you told me going into a match, there's going to be a single tag and both baby faces are just going to take 10 minutes apiece getting their butt kicked, I'd think that doesn't sound all that interesting or dynamic. But I assure you, it is both things. The selling is amazing. The heat is amazing. The psychology is amazing, as we've gone over. And it's an underrated match. And people don't talk about it as much. So I figured, you know, you can have your 6394s and your 6995s and your 12696s, which is my personal favorite of the lot. We've already done that match with Brendan Thurston. But I'll take this underrated tag match from 1989.
Kind of 11-29-89. We'll make it famous. We'll make those numbers famous.
I hope it's going to hold up to those other numbers.
Well, hey, you know what? Like, apparently, like a lot of people in wrestling like this show.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed. Like when people tell me, oh yeah, like so-and-so likes your,
I was going to say you had Kingston on the show, obviously. So, who's, you know, obviously, one of the more outspoken fans of the style. So
yeah.
Someone who I was lucky enough to wrestle in Germany right before the pandemic. So, very, very nice guy. So
I'm hoping to meet up with him, maybe either in Chicago for All Out Week, as we record this, we're about a week out from me traveling there with Mike Murray, or maybe I'm going to meet up with Eddie here in Toronto when AEW comes through.
Oh,
we'll see.
Sense. Yep.
Well, you know what? I hope you can make it out to Toronto at some point, and then we can meet up again.
And it's been a couple years. And maybe we could actually, I mean, we had a nice conversation at the venue, but it'd be nice to actually spend a little bit of time and get a bite to eat. And I plan on, you know, we're in the same country. We're obviously very far apart from one another.
But I would
love that. I appreciate it. And the same goes for you. If you ever have a layover on your way to Japan and you're staying in Vancouver, I would love to show you around Vancouver. So
that'd be awesome, dude. But I didn't want to give you a chance to plug because you kind of made some announcements recently at wrestling shows about the kind of the status of your career. If you just want to, I don't know, like talk about it with our listeners.
Absolutely. So for those unaware, I recently made a bit of a public statement as a part of the SCI weekend in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you haven't seen those shows, check them out over on IWTV, which is a great streaming service for independent wrestling. I suffered a pretty bad back injury this past June, and that is reminiscent of one I had like 10, 12 years ago. And for the time being, I'm done wrestling for all of 2022, just doing physical therapy and focusing on getting healthy again. And then come 2023, things are a little bit up in the air. At a minimum, I will have at least two more matches, one in Vancouver and one in Seattle, because those are my homes, basically. Vancouver is my home. Seattle is my second home. My girlfriend lives in Seattle. I spent a lot of time in Seattle, and I truly made my name and wrestled some of my most amazing matches ever in Seattle. So I really owe it to that city. Beyond that, I don't know. You know what? I'd love to wrestle in Toronto. I never got to wrestle in Japan. I never got to wrestle in Mexico. I'd love to go back to Europe. These are all things I hope to do. But I have a really amazing life outside of wrestling. I have really amazing people in my life, and so those things are important too. So 2023, it might be it. We don't know. We'll see how physiotherapy goes. But at a minimum, you got two more chances to see me. And if you don't already, please follow me on social media. At Daniel Makabe on Twitter and Instagram. And that's where you're going to find out where I'm at, what I'm doing, as well as, you know, I talk about music and plug my friends, you know, like WH's podcasts or other friends of mine podcasts. You know, one of the reasons why I first heard about this match was my friend Chris Zellner, who does an amazing podcast, Between the Sheets, with David Bix. I know Zellner is a big fan of this match. And so, you know, I'm always happy to put over my friends and use my platform to help grow their platform. So yourself included, I appreciate you having me on the show, and I'm always glad to give you a retweet and a listen. So
thanks. Well, definitely 2023, come back to the show.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about it. Maybe the gimmick has to be you pick an obscure match. Doesn't necessarily have to be from the 90s.
At this point, because
that's from the 80s as well.
We were the ones who had to upload the last match to YouTube, right? It wasn't even on YouTube. So it's still up there. Well, maybe I didn't say that. But anyways, check out, if you haven't seen that last match and episode 2, go back and listen to that.
Yeah,
that
it's a great, great show. I don't know what else to plug here. Like, you know, at WH Park 9, Post Perez, MC
Post-wrestling.
Later.
thank you for making this all possible.
I definitely think like if you come to Toronto and want to hang out, like I think I can wrangle John Pollock and Wei Ting to come hang out with us and have a meal with us.
That I'm a big enough draw that I can get those guys to come hang out.
I think we can make it happen. You just give me a heads up about if you're coming into Toronto, we can make arrangements to get something cool to eat in the city with at least one of those guys for sure.
Awesome.
All right, for everyone, hey, thank you for listening to the Long Winding Road. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for buying the t-shirt. It's still available. It's still popular. We might be getting something new in before the end of the year. I don't know. I'm kind of working on things, ideas. We'll see. We're going to working on some cool guests before the end of the year as well. And yeah, until next time, thanks for watching. And on behalf of Daniel, talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.